Hello, Paul here, you there. Di Woolridge coming up. This episode of Catching Up with me, Paul Carenza. Long form interviews with people. I say interviews, low pressure chats, really, because that is how you get the best out of people. Just be human. So here is a human. You will like him. I like him. He's a poet, a spoken word artist or artiste. We're not quite sure. We will get to how that is quite a tricky job title shortly. We talk lockdown, lament, looking after the planet and feeling bad about eating steak, plus writing, poetry, music, loads on music. Oh, it was a joy to chat to Di. I hope it's also a joy to listen to him. You be the judge. One of the world's greatest Welshmen, Di Woolridge, is approximately here.
Oh, I'm on mute.
You're on mute. Yes, indeed. Sorry, I don't know if you're waiting for a while there. I'm on a different screen entirely and didn't see
you. Oh, yeah, no drama at all. Yeah, you didn't miss much. Just me smashing my saucy sauce sec.
Excellent.
Euphemism.
I'm jealous of your saucy sauce sec.
It's one of the things we've got into in the third lock. I think we found it in the third lockdown. Mm. Kath just kind of, she just saw a saucy sauce sec on sale. She's nice. Like, get some of that for Davs. And I think we're hooked on it, mate.
Yeah. How many a week are you getting through?
I think we're having one a week, but it's not lasting a week. It's lasting about kind of 3 days, I think.
Yeah,
so, yeah. It's just amazing, isn't it? I mean, it just costs a fortune. Like, it's like eight quid.
Do you know, I reckon there's a great, I don't know, blog, podcast, series to be had on, your lockdown discoveries of, and as you said, you know, lockdown three, we discovered this. Lockdown one, we discovered that. But that was then. That was then. Yeah. This is now. We're different people. And but particularly, didn't do online shopping until all of this. And I'm sure many others didn't as well. But as a result, by shopping, I mean, we're using the same shop, Sainsbury's and Tesco, really. Mm. But you find it in a different way. And also in a shop, you walk around, you get different things, you get inspired. Now you just go, yep, favourites. We had it last time. Steak and chips. Jobs are good. Yeah. You know. And every week, we're a bit hooked on the, I know it's not good for the environment or that, but the steaks that you get from the Sainsbury's garlic butter, £3.50 a go. Oh, they're just divine. They're just lovely.
Listen, you know, I mean, I don't want to go down that route of, you know, debating about our cows. I get it, Paul. I do get it, but they're tasty as well, you know. So
they are. It's tricky, isn't it?
I feel for them. I do feel for them, and I want to be more conscious about the environment. But I want to kind of consider it as I'm tucking into my steak, and I know that makes me a bad human being.
Yeah, think about it afterwards. Feel bad after, and it's tough, isn't it?
That's it. Are you tired? Is this recording?
Well, sort of. You know what I mean? Generally, I would have said no.
But there's such gold there in the saucy
sec conversation that there's no way I'm going to leave that one out. That's it.
Okay.
So
So in that case, I'm just going to hold a kind of mini press conference and apologise to all the vegans and environmentalists out there. And you know we're on a journey, aren't we, Paul?
We are. And I know we'll. I should set up from the start. There's no real set, agenda with this sort of discussion or podcast. Just a general chit chat sort of thing. But one of the things that as we dovetail in and out of, you know, life, home, work, whatever, and everything. Last summer, so my lockdown one project, I suppose, one of them, I co-wrote a book with Ruth Valerio, who I'm sure, you know, sure you're familiar with.
Yes.
Writer, preacher, environmental, the person to go to, the person that Greta Thunberg would grow up to be. But Ruth knows environmental issues inside out, and
she's the Don of the environment.
Literally, Dr. Ruth Valeria, and so she wants to do a book for children about the environment, about how to try and save the planet a bit. And I've written for children, so she thought, well, let's get Carenza on board. And but I'm not very good at the environment. I'm working on the environment stuff. It was really interesting writing a book with her, coming up with lots of different ideas, where you can constantly feel the presence of her on your shoulder going, yeah, steaks, not so much a good idea. But then equally, I was there, I suppose, part of it, you know, whatever she was writing, going, yeah, but realistically, Ruth, I think a lot of other people at the minute, we're not kind of living in that. We aim for this, but the minute still,
we're not there yet,
we might need a car, you know, to get about. Like that. Yeah. It's, but we're trying, we're on a journey.
Yeah.
And the kicker to that thing, though, is that, you know, we wrote it last summer. And then we had to do that, you know, the final process of going through the finishing the draft and all that. But it was summer holidays, right? So, and this is when things lifted up a bit. We went down to Cornwall, where I'm from originally, so going to see the family. And on the literally the tip of the country, not quite Land's End or the Lizard, but another little peninsula point, St. Maur's Castle, this beautiful castle on the South Cornish coast. I'm there with my family. And we went to, there's a little, because the cafes were closed, of course, this is summer 2020. And we went, there was a little coffee van. So we just went, oh yeah, you know what? The kids have been driving us mad. We'd had a week of it. The accommodation was not working out for various reasons, whatever. And we'd had a time of it. We're just like, okay, we need a coffee. Got to kickstart a day with a coffee. Went to the coffee van, got two coffees, me and my wife, little latte, the kids as well. They had a little hot chocolate. We walk around the corner, literally standing on the cliff edge, looking at the Atlantic Ocean. And around the corner comes Ruth Valerio with her two daughters. And A, I owed her the latest chapter of this book. And I clearly wasn't doing it because I was on holiday and I'd not told her. And B, we're all holding non-recyclable, single-use bought coffee cups.
Absolutely red-handed. Yeah,
totally. It's like, oh, busted. Absolutely busted. On the edge of the country, she's found us.
Did she kick off and, you know, just kind of chuck the polystyrene out of your hand and kind of walk off, snapping her fingers? Or was she very gracious and, you know?
She was very gracious. I could feel the... The irony was, I mean, this is clearly, I mean, this is one of those moments where I know that the good Lord was looking down at me going, look, you're going to just go that way. I'm just going to nudge you that way. Because in fact, we'd finished our drinks and I just stacked them up and I was looking for a bin and I went round the corner and I found a bin and I was heading towards it. And literally, if she'd been 3 seconds later, they would have been in that bin. And instead it was like, ah, I've been caught red handed. Yeah.
As guilty, to quote Blackadder, as guilty as a puppy sitting next to a pile of poo.
Yeah, that was me. I was holding the pile of poo. The non-recyclable pile
That's
of poo.
It.
But enough about me and my writing projects. Di Woolridge, the man, the legend, writer extraordinaire. How would you describe yourself? Who is Di Woolridge? Who is, are you, you know, there you are. Let's start with that.
So I kind of go for, this is kind of what I go for, Paul. I go for poet, storyteller, spoken word artist. So I kind of check the three out there and see what lands, really. I mean, it's a funny one, isn't it? And I think of you in this sense as well, that you kind of do a variety of different things. And so sometimes it can be hard to kind of condense it down into one thing. But I think if I was pushed, I'd probably say poet.
It is everything. What proportion is everything you write? I mean, I don't know everything like shopping lists, you know, but is everything you write professionally poetry then? Are you full, or is it like 80, 90%? Or is it what's?
No, you're right. It's not. I mean, I think, you know, what for me, it's all about using, I think my passion is communicating my kind of faith, really, and my relationship with Jesus and you know, what inspires me in the Bible, and to just kind of communicate it in creative, down to earth, accessible ways. And I think the vehicle for me to do that lots of the time it's kind of through poetry. I think similar to you, there's a relationship with the written and the spoken. I think when you kind of, because you're obviously a writer as well, but you know, I know, you know, you're a stand-up and you kind of deliver your lines live, and it kind of brings a totally different element, doesn't it? It kind of, it brings it into a whole new sort of dimension. And I think I think similar for me, there's that relationship between what's written and then when you speak it, it kind of, yeah, brings it to life essentially. So it's not just poetry what I do. But I was going to say spoken word sounds cool. I don't know, does it? Does it sound cool or does it sound pretentious? Who knows?
So it's somewhere between the two. It depends on the day, doesn't it? I think it depends who's saying it, probably. You make it cool, you know, so that's okay.
Bless you. If you could have gone, well, actually, I'm a spoken word artiste. You know, it's kind of...
yeah. Then you go over the edge. Then it's no longer cool. Then it's pretentious.
Ruthful area would just push you off the cliff then.
I think it's the extra E of artiste. I think you could be a spoken word artist. You get away with it. But the artiste, it's like, oh, forget it. Yeah, that's it. You went one vowel too far.
Yeah. It's just taking the mick that bit. But I think kind of... It's all about using creativity for me. I think that's the kind of vehicle. And I love words. I love kind of the way they sound, how you can, you know, form them together and create something. So poetry is a big part of that. But, you know, kind of creative prose, everyday language, that kind of stuff, how you can use language fascinates me. And I think how you can use it to engage people, inspire people is kind of, it gives me a bit of a kick really. So it's through a variety of, I guess, creative forms, but those would be the ones I'd kind of hang my hat on, the kind of poet, storyteller, spoken word artist / artiste.
Nice. Yeah, artista, if you want to go there. add a different vowel, artisto. And I think in your case, and I don't want to sound like some sort of home counties, you know, moron, but you're, because you, I don't know, presumably you wouldn't think that you necessarily have an accent, but you have a great accent, you know, and I wonder if that adds to the poetry, because if you had a rubbish accent, you know, then it wouldn't work at all.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I think, I certainly am thankful for having my accent, and I think it does add something to, you know, when I try and bring words off a page, hopefully it sounds engaging in some way. I remember someone once said that, you know, I'd make the yellow pages sound good, and I was incredibly flattered but incredibly offended at the same time. Actually, there's a lot of work that goes into this.
Exactly.
Reading the other bit, you know. But at the same time, I was like, oh, thank you. You think my accent and my voice is that good.
But it makes the next book nice and easy. You just, you know, copy out the phone book. Fine. You know,
copy and paste it. Yeah. That's it.
But I'd have thought some poets, you know, I've heard who read their work aloud. I went to a poetry festival a couple of years ago, and you could tell that they are writers first and foremost, and when forced, read it aloud, but haven't quite got the delivery chops necessarily. Whereas your work certainly, you know, it's great writing anyway, but it elevates it to a whole other level to hear you say it. So I think it's, in your case, have you written for other people, for example, any stuff you've done, if read by someone else, it wouldn't be as good, would it? It's you. It's your part. The text would be marvellous, of course. I've just done exactly the same thing as the Yellow Pages person. What I mean is that it seems like it's meant to be delivered by you. It seems, and I suppose that's where it's spoken word rather than, or written word.
Yeah, no, bless you, Paul. I appreciate that. I think, I do write in my own voice. I think that is something that I do. So I kind of, I write what I think would sound good as I imagine I would kind of speak it. So there's definitely that kind of correlation between the two. So you're right in that sense. But, you know, there have been times as well, you know, that I might write a kind of, a creative story presentation. And, you know, I'd be kind of divvying up lines for different people. And I think there's certainly a kick out of kind of writing for someone else as well, as you imagine their tone and their kind of characteristics and what makes them them. And so there is something in me that kind of enjoys that element. I don't do it often, but you know, recently I kind of did a history of the Reformation creative presentation, and we kind of, you know, I would kind of essentially, you know, kind of steer the presentation, but there were sort of three or four other musicians, singers, storytellers, my wife being one of them. And we kind of, and I kind of thought, oh, this person's really deadpan. I'd love to kind of, you know, write in her voice. And so there's certainly, you do get a sense of satisfaction as a writer doing that. But I mean, you're the kind of, you're such a pro at that, aren't you? Because you obviously do your own material, but you write for other people as well, don't you? So what's that like on the flip side? What's it like for you, you know, writing for, you know, your Lee Max and your Tim Vines and people like that, Miranda?
Yeah, oh, I think it's a bit of a, I'm certainly still learning myself. And I know for a fact that when we did first couple of seasons of Not Going Out, we've just started now actually this week on season, I think 11, something like that, 11 or 12. But the first couple of seasons, I was stealing jokes from my own stand-up set and then putting it in Lee's mouth for the show, and it offered Tim Vine's, you know, part, whatever. And it was all a bit interchangeable. It was like a collection of jokes on a page. And I think I've watched it an episode back lately. I generally would not go out, only ever watch each episode once when it goes out and never see it again. But I happened to see on Dave or something, a very old episode or a clip or something. And I thought, oh yeah, it's moved on a bit. Or I've moved on in the way I write anyway, in that back then, yeah, I just thought, oh yeah, well, that person could say that the lines are interchangeable, you know. Whereas now I know there's this thing where you know, writing a script where you cover up the character names, could you still tell who's talking by the fact that they have a slightly different tone, or some people start with an or whatever, some people exclamation marks, some have really long dark lines of dialogue and some are really short, and all that sort of, and those are sort of the more obvious ways you can instantly look at the page and see who's talking, let alone the subject matter and the, and also I think in terms of humour as well, the sort of comedy they do, you know, slightly different. So with Not Going Out, yeah, Lee's got one type of sardonic pun-based humour, often a bit filthy. And whereas the latest episode we're doing, for example, there's a character called Anna who's like a best friend, sort of, well, she's an awful human being. So she's like a neighbour they tolerate. But she's snooty and snobbish and all that sort of thing. Yeah. So her sort of comedy is she speaks fast and she rants and she's, you know, judging all the people she's just seen at the supermarket. She's got a very different sort of humour, I suppose. So certainly nowadays when I approach a new script, or normally I'm still writing for other people, so there's an existing show and I've got to try and fit into it, then yeah, I suppose it's a case of working out the differences between the characters, and often I think what they're trying to highlight in each other as well. So why is this person particularly arrogant because the other character isn't, or is this person angry because the other's kind of like, hey, calm down, you know? I'm looking out for those things, you know. Still learning though, still trying, you know.
Come on. Hey, going back to our earlier point about when I mentioned about the saucy Sosek and Ruth Valerio kind of came to the conversation. We're on a journey. You know, we're on a journey with how we engage with our food.
Yeah, exactly. Food and words.
And our writing as well, yeah.
It all comes back to food and words, doesn't it? That's about it.
Yeah.
It's all we need. Yeah.
Corinthians 13, that was, wasn't it?
I think so.
Three things will remain. Food and words.
Yeah, exactly.
The third I've forgotten.
And the greatest of these is probably food, actually, yeah. Steak. The greatest of these is actually just steak. How's lockdown been, or lockdown 1, 2, 3, whichever number we're on now? Has it all been for your creativity and things like that? Has it been a challenge? Has it been a new experience working from home, or how's all that been for you?
I think, like, to a degree, I've kind of, you know, I work from home, or I'm based at home anyway, you know. So I think that wasn't it's not like I was in a kind of 9 to 5 working in an office, and then all of a sudden, you know, lockdown happens, and I'm like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. You know, my wife's everywhere. there was a little bit of that. I think pre kind of lockdown, We'd both work kind of partly from home. You know, I work for Bible Society. We'd sometimes go into the office, and we'd like to work at coffee shops. And we'd kind of like manage our week around each other. So, you know, she kind of would drop a hint and go, okay, so I'm kind of going to be working from home today. And I'd be like, sure, clock that. I'm going to make myself scarce, put myself in a coffee shop, and vice versa. And it would work. So I think the first kind of few weeks, I think it was certainly kind of, I think everyone was just lamenting, kind of in shock a little bit, weren't they? Kind of, you know, what's going on? What does this mean? I kind of refer to feeling like David in the Psalms, kind of 1 minute going, everything's great, and two, everything's horrendous, everything's cancelled. You know, that famous Psalm that David wrote, everything's cancelled. What a way to know.
Yeah, it's a deleted scene, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. It's between Psalm 118 and Psalm 119. It's kind of in the middle of those two somewhere. Yeah. I got lost in translation, I think. But I think it's certainly been that word again. It's certainly been a journey. I think I was kind of a bit. First off, I think it really hit home when Big Church Day Out was cancelled. So I was going to be doing some stuff with Bible Society, and I was going to be kind of helping shape the spoken word stage, this kind of new tent that was going to be there. And I think just really excited about it. And when that was cancelled, I was kind of like, okay, you know, this is real now. This is not just something that, you know, is kind of happening on the other side of the world. And, you know, there's been a couple of cases in the UK. That's kind of when it became real to me, this huge festival that I was spending lots of my energy on, most of my energy on, I think, to be honest. And so I think I kind of felt this sense of kind of grieving in a weird way. And it sounds kind of, just really over the top when you kind of say it out loud, kind of considering all the people lost. But I think we've all kind of been through some space of grief, haven't we, with
absolutely
stuff that's been cancelled. And I think, you know, for me as a Christian, you know, one of the things that would be core to me is that what I do doesn't bring me value. It's the fact that God loves me and you know, who he's made me to be. And I think saying that and believing that when I had all these things that was giving me value was easy. And I think when those things were taken away, it was like, oh man, I didn't realize how much worth and value I put in these things that I do. So I think that was a lesson for me. And I think I've got to keep relearning that one, if I'm honest. So I think in that sense, I think it's been kind of humbling and shaping and stretching. But I think the flip side, I think that there's nothing better than, I think, when as communicators we engage with what's happening in the world and we try and make sense of it. I think that's kind of what we largely do, don't we? I think you know, you kind of do it through poetry and through comedy, and I kind of, you know, try and do it through spoken word and other elements and storytelling as well. And I think there was a sense of, alongside kind of grieving some of this stuff being lost, there was also a sense of, how do we make sense of this? You know, this is something that is affecting everyone. And I think what I wanted, I just felt really kind of convicted to want to try and speak hope into it without kind of papering over the, you know, the sheer magnitude of it and how much it's affecting. So I think speaking kind of into the lament and the hope through creativity, I think was something that, you know, I was able to do. And so I put together this, I wrote this spoken word piece kind of 1:30 in the morning when I was, when I had symptoms of COVID a year ago. You know, I couldn't say I had it categorically, because back then, you know, they were like, you have to have a fever, otherwise you don't have it. And I was like, all right, I think I've got it, but sure. But yeah, just kind of, I found myself, you know, not being able to sleep, thinking, this is huge. We've not been through anything like this as not just as a nation, but, you know, globally, this is a kind of first in our lifetime. And I think that is the beauty of, you know, of using the tools that we've got, creativity, storytelling, poetry, that when you engage, you know, big kind of questions that people have or huge life circumstances people are facing, you kind of, it's, it's not just, oh, that's a clever rhyme, or that's an interesting piece of wordplay. You know, you're speaking about something meaningful that means something to people. So I think on the one hand, the very long answer, but to summarize it, I think there's been learning and stretching and growing as I've been lamenting what has been lost. But there's also been a kind of conviction to go, wow, you know, if there's anything I want to use my creativity for is to try and speak hope into this and to, just kind of respect the weightiness of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, lament is certainly one of the key words I've been dwelling on through a lot of this. And indeed, grieving for time as well, which sounds odd, doesn't it? And as you said, you don't want to say it flippantly or anything, because people are grieving actual people. But there was a moment, I think, last year where, and I could see it for us, it was fairly early on, and I hit a big low very early on with it. And then, generally speaking, ever since then, it's been a gradual, gain from that low. Okay. But I saw, as you know, that struck us really early on, because all my stand-up gigs went just at the same time as my wife was very ill moderately ill with COVID. The people have been, who've of course been very, very ill, but she was ill enough that we had paramedics here several times. She didn't go to hospital, but it was a tough time. But while we were doing that, the most of our friends, it seems, were kind of carrying on as usual, and it hadn't quite struck yet. But then I've seen amongst them having that sort of, the grieving for time lost came later, I think, when suddenly a wedding cancels or a holiday cancels, or, it's come to us all at different stages and times, as to at what point you accept it, I think. And you've got to accept it at some point. And I still see some people who haven't necessarily quite accepted it, even now, it seems, going, why can't I have my holiday now? I go, well, for a few reasons. It's tough. But everyone's got their own responses to it. And I think, I'm trying deeply every day to not be as judgmental as my urges are telling me to be, whether it's people I see, meeting up when they shouldn't be, or, trying to book that holiday going, well, I earned this holiday, I'm going to have it, or whatever. But we're all getting through it differently. And, I know there's rights and wrongs and what you should and shouldn't do. And we're being, I think, particularly on the super safe side. But I think every reaction feels like a human reaction to this one. It's not easy.
I think you're spot on. And I didn't even realize about your wife. So I'm sorry to hear that. But I hope she's kind of on the mend.
She's getting there now. We're doing all right.
Great. But I think, it's interesting, isn't it? Kind of lockdown one, it was a kind of case of everyone kind of banded together. And in Pontypridd, which is where I'm living, South Wales, we kind of had a flood that Pontypridd hadn't seen for like 60 years or something. It took out, decimated so many houses. The whole town was flooded. So many shops had shut down. And it was horrific. But what you got from it was you just saw community rallying together, kind of going, right, let's kind of roll our sleeves up and, get stuck in and help each other out. And I think what the valleys is kind of known for, in some sense, this kind of sense of community that I think sometimes gets lost. But you kind of saw it in its beauty, But then a few weeks later, you kind of COVID kind of hits. So it was just a double whammy for us in Ponty. People were just kind of, just kind of getting their breath back from this flood. And then lockdown happens. But I think similarly, you kind of see people rallying together. I think you saw that sense of flip, this is huge, this has affected all of us. And, the clap for carers and the NHS, that was just a great symbol of, we're in this together, we're on the same side. You're right. I think over the course of a year, it's not as black and white as, obviously you have to kind of keep to restrictions, but it's hard, isn't it? And different people are in different situations. And I think the shame that's kind of that maybe we've got to as seeing perhaps where people, yeah, kind of perhaps a bit more divisive. I think what I'd love to see what was gained in lockdown one kind of come back, really, that sense of togetherness, you know, we're in this together. But it's it's all a case of learning and growing, isn't it?
It felt like a bit of a landmark moment we had this week, when the windows I can see just in front of me if I can see the sellotape across it all now, where we've just taken down the rainbows that have been up here for a year.
Okay, yeah,
and
yeah,
we took them down because we could just see one of it was peeling away, and then we thought, oh yeah, that tape is really marking the window. It's been up there a long time. And then you think, then I felt disrespectful going, we're taking down the rainbows. But then there's got to be a lifespan to these things. How long do you, like the clap for carers, that probably couldn't have gone on forever. And they tried bringing it back, and I didn't even sort of see how that kind of came and then went again. But there is a sense of the community spirit that certain moments last year that I'll never forget. The VE Day celebration thing we had last summer, which was a... we don't do that every year because it was the anniversary, of course, the big moment. And yeah, our community, we had loads of people came out, but from a distance, and it was that odd thing of together, but a bit of a distance. Yeah. And, you got one household playing a bit of 1940s jazz from one thing, another lot with some Pims and sort of toasting at a distance and all that sort of thing. And it was a really nice sense of community going on there. And we started locally, actually, just having a big clear out. Charity shops were closed. So we started putting out big box on the driveway with a big sign, help yourself. And then others in the street started doing it as well. And it's still happening now. It's probably about three houses in our sort of little neighborhoods every weekend. Now the sun's out again, just starting up again.
I am literally just making a note of that, because I've got a shed full of stuff for the charity shop. I've not been able to take.
Yeah, well, it's been great. And, you know, we've got rid of a lot of stuff. We've gained a bit of stuff as well. And, you know, the local Facebook group pings up on a Saturday morning. It says, we've just put out these board games. It's like, right, I'm out there. Come on, I've got to go. Get them. And I'm thinking of maybe not yet, but maybe when things ease up a little bit further, of suggesting on the Facebook group, like, let's have one day where we all... You know, rather than save up and I might do it next weekend or week up, let's have one day when we all do it. And then we can all, in the absence of a local village fate, I don't know when fates will come back, either this summer or not, but it might be that one this summer. But if not, let's have one day, we all get out there, and from a safe distance, when things have eased up a little bit, and then you can just go, every other house is going to have a big box of rubbish that you can go and exchange your rubbish for someone else's, you know. And that community spirit is alive again.
I think that sounds great. And I think you're right. It's similar for us. One of the highlights has been, has been kind of I think the fact that neighbours have just got closer in this time. So for us, a neighbour a few doors down, you know, would kind of do sort of gigs in pubs and things. And he had his own PA system, and a couple of his sons played guitar and bass, and they basically just kind of went out on their terrace just kind of did a few kind of songs from the 80s, 90s. You had some classics like Phil Collins in there. You know, there were some good kind of rocking tunes. Mm. And the sun was shining, and it just brought so much joy. And I think people were struggling to find joy, I think, in lockdown one. It just felt great. And a couple of weeks later, another guy who was a professional singer, used to be a professional singer, then became a nurse. So he was kind of on the front line, you know, handling COVID in the day. But then, kind of on the weekend, he did this amazing gig for us. And so Kath and I, because Kath's a professional singer.
Yeah, of course.
We were like, right, we need to step up. These guys have done it. So we're like, we're going to do it as well. And it was one of my hands down kind of favorite times of last year, is when we did like a little set. I wrote a kind of comedy poem on what I, you know, when I think of Wales, I think of ... And we sang some songs. Kath sang The Blessing, which was a song that went viral. And great. Yeah, it was just amazing. And I think I'd love to see us bring that back this year, you know, because it did bring joy. It did kind of bring community together. And it'd be a shame to kind of lose that, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd kind of forgotten about how big music has been in some of this as well. And a couple of key moments for me, I'll do the sad one first. My, it's even brutal to think about, but when I, we took our kids out of school a few days before the Prime Minister closed them, you know, at the time, there were a few people going, you know, in fact, at one point, I think it was getting like half the class was gone sort of thing, because there was that question mark over like, you know, before the school's actually closed, thinking, do we pull them out now or what? You know, yeah. So we actually pulled ours out a few days before it was sort of the Prime Minister said so. And at that point, the head teacher was going like, yeah, if you want to go home for a bit, you know, because there was no home learning at this point. It was like, what now? So we're like, I think we're going to pull the kids out of school. And that was like, that was a big moment. I'm like, what? That's not a thing. You know, we're not home learning. We're not homeschool people. That's never going to happen. And I remember, and this is, it's the sad trigger warning, but I remember parked outside my son's school, going to get him on that day. And I knew, and in discussion with my wife, this was going to be the day that I would pick him up. And that was it. We didn't know when he was going to go back, but we're going to pick both the kids up and stay at home then, you know, batten down the hatches. Yeah. And I think realistically, the school sort of knew that it was a matter of time as well. It's another 5 days, I think, before Boris Johnson did his big speech. So in fact, yes, it's about a year ago now, basically, you know, late March now. Mm-hmm. And I was parked outside the car. At my son's school, you've got to get there early to get a parking space because it's chocker. And I got there about...
You've got to beat all the mums and dads.
Absolutely. It's brutal there, you know.
In that spot.
Yeah, so I parked outside there. It was a hot day because it's a warm March day. And I could hear in an open classroom window, because this is when they were just advising to open windows a bit more and weather was nice. I could hear, if I'm honest, badly, the school orchestra practicing some music together. And you could hear the of the violins and the of the trumpets, of the flutes.
Talk through the instruments. Yeah,
it did not sound top of its game. But you could hear children trying together to play music. Mm. And I knew that I hadn't told my kids yet. I got them in the car and was like, by the way, that's your last time at school for who knows how long. And I realistically knew that all the other kids will be a matter of time before they go home as well. And just to hear that sound for the last time of children playing badly together. But musical communal togetherness. And that was a really sad, and I remember it being in my car, and I completely bawled my eyes out. I was in floods of tears, which is, I'm not a crier normally. But then the irony that I'd just been out to, also on that run, I'd been out to the shops to get this, to get that, last run to town, quickly gather all the things we need from the cook shop, from the DIY store, all those things.
Yeah.
Before we batten down the hatches, dog food, quickly get some dog food. But I'd handled all this stuff, and I thought, I was in tears, and I thought, I can't even wipe my eyes because I've got infected hands, and I've not been to wash my hands yet. And I just thought, I remember actually at the time sending up an hour of prayer going, this feels like what I do now. I can't even wipe my eyes as I'm picking up my children from school where I'm hearing for the last time music played badly and I'm crying about it. And that was that was a low, you know. But so more optimistically, though, late summer when we kind of got more used to lockdown one and all that, about five doors down that way, we've got a piano teacher. She's now in her 70s, I think, retired local music teacher and plays piano, plays really beautifully. And I didn't know this, but I think she's very good. So I think she's a music teacher for lots of different, like singing teacher as well. And so this is when the theatres had all closed and everything. And we suddenly heard beautiful days, windows open, everyone at home, you know, stay at home kind of rule. But we heard this opera singing from down there. And I think it was just the time when people were like, okay, well, you can go to other people's houses for a bit sort of thing, if you're good and, you know, cross your fingers. And we heard this baritone opera singer and he sounded incredible. It sounded like, I don't know, Pavarotti except baritone, whatever that is. But he sounded, this was clearly Royal Opera House level.
No, I messed that up.
That one, Baratonov Roti.
Banoffee
pie.
There's wordplay there. I just can't get it.
This is two poets chatting, trying to find the rhyme. Banoffee pie, Pavarotti, Baratonov. Anyway.
Let me write it down, find the hyphen, change the word. Yeah, I'll get back to you.
Canatoni.
Within 3 to 4 working days.
Absolutely. It's exactly, paid commission. It sounded beautiful, and he was there all day. It's probably about 7 hours. You could just hear on and off, and it was music from a neighbor's house that wasn't annoying, and it was just lovely to hear some really lovely, beautiful opera sing. I'm not an opera fan, but it was a bit of hope, and it was lovely. And we're on an upward turn now, I think. Those musical moments really stand out for me as big, big memories from this.
Same. I wonder if that's been kind of similar, just to kind of cross the communities in the UK. Because I think that was one of the things that kept us going lockdown one, was the weather was beautiful, wasn't it? And I think everyone was, socially distanced, but you were able to kind of, just hang out outside your house. And we've kind of got a street where you can kind of see neighbours and wave at them. And so, it was amazing. So in between growing 27 tomato plants in my lean-to, and driving Kath absolutely round the wall, we were able to do that. But what lockdown skills have you acquired then, Paul?
None. How to juggle several projects at once, I suppose, while trying to homeschool the kids, while trying to also my wife's now working at the local hospital, which she had taken a decade off. Paid work really to deal with the kids, and now she just applied for this job before all this kicked off. Wow. So she's not gone to because of all this necessarily, but she's there in spite of all this. And so she's working there 3 days a week, and so I'm now doing the cleaning up the house, I'm doing the hoovering, the washing,
multitasking,
all those things while trying to write a sitcom, trying to write a book, trying to do an online gig, get the tech right for that, pick up the kids, don't forget what time that is, all that sort of thing. So multitasking, I suppose that has been a skill. Apart from that, my lockdown project has been all about the history of broadcasting. I started a podcast on that, and that's been kind of because I wanted to write a book about it, wanted to pitch a TV show about it. So I thought, let's do a podcast about it because it's all audio. So that's been my lockdown project, I suppose. But no, I've not made any sourdough. I've not learned a foreign language. I've not learned to tap dance. I feel in many ways I've wasted it, but that's part of the issue, isn't it? We can all look at it all and go, oh, why have I not? I know writers. I know a couple of writers who have been churning out books through this and go, brilliant, I've got all this time. And they wrote 6 books last year. Good luck to you.
That's just annoying, isn't it? Come on. Yeah.
I'm aware that I started this conversation saying last summer in lockdown one, I co-wrote a book with Ruth, And people can hear that going, God, I can't believe lockdown one, I'm sitting there at home kind of worrying about the apocalypse and he's there writing another book. So I'm well aware the grass is always greener and you can look at other people
The grass is always greener on the other side for you. For me, the grass has less molehills on the other side than me, because I've got, there's a little blighter in my garden. And honestly, he's tucking away at the lawn.
Really?
He's on the right go, he's aerating it apparently, which is a good thing. Let's ask Valeria when she's next.
Exactly, I'll have to. Well, she's going to be on this podcast soon. We're not going to get her soon. Yeah. So mole catching has not been one of your lockdown skills that you've...
I mean, mole watching or mole mound watching, because I've not seen a mole, but I've seen lots of mounds appear.
Is it whack-a-mole, isn't it? That funfair thing.
It is whack-a-mole, yeah. And I think, I think he's laughing at me, but Kath and I are suckers for personification. So as soon as he became a kind of person, he kind of endeared himself to us. So we like him now, even though he's destroying my garden. There you go. Tangent.
I wonder what Ruth Valera would make of whack-a-mole, because that's technically encouraging animal cruelty, isn't it? Even though it's a fun, fair game, it's not that fun or not that fair on the poor mole. So
I think there's got to be consent from the mole, that he wants to participate in this. And maybe, it could be a contractual obligation that the mole could whack us back, if we kind of lose or something. So, but we need to kind of dig deeper on that one, don't we?
There needs to be a vegan equivalent of whack-a-mole, I think. You know, what can I say? We should draw to a conclusion because, look, you've got another saucisson sec to eat, I'm sure, that, you know, chatting over lunchtime. So where can we find your stuff? How do we find some Die Woolridge in our lives? How do we get some of your brilliant writing in our eyes and all that stuff?
Bless you. Bless you, PK. Thank you so much. So you can check out some of my spoken word stuff on spoken-truth.com. So that's kind of where I do a catalogue of my spoken word films, looking at Christmas, looking at Easter, looking at different biblical themes in a creative way through spoken words. So you can check that out there. And I'm very excited to say that I released a brand new book called God's Brilliantly Big Creation Story, which I feel is kind of in keeping with our conversation about Ruth Valerio and the environment. So I've written a book.
You're on brand, absolutely. Too yeah, right.
Absolutely on brand. Yeah, right. But yeah, it's a children's book, just kind of creatively retelling the creation story, just to kind of bring it to life for families, for kind of parents and kids. So it's written in a kind of spoken word kind of style. And that's coming out on April the 12th. And you can pre-order at dyingcath.com. So yeah, you can check that out.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this thing. And yeah, can't wait to see what you do next and what the next spell of creativity over the next few years brings forth for us. What is the plan? Is there a grand, if you've got like 10 years from now, 5 years from now, you want to just I don't know, the entire Bible in poetry form, the thing is, you seem to be very reactive, you know, you're yeah, writing by what is occurring at the right yeah, time. So maybe who knows what the next things will be.
Well that's it. I think in short, it's both, isn't it? I think I want to try and be responsive to what's happening, to kind of create stuff that, yeah, it just responds to what's going on and hopefully engages with where people are at. But I mean, in terms of kind of big vision stuff, that's a great question. I've always wanted to kind of, learn as much scripture as possible to then kind of recite in a kind of spoken word kind of vibe. So I think that would be pretty cool to do. I'm digging into the Psalms at the minute as well. So who knows, maybe a spoken word Psalm 119, nice, where the audience, you know, maybe don't fall asleep.
The one about
long, because it's long. Not
I
because
see.
It's not good. Yeah, I work for Bible Society. Yeah. The Bible's brilliant. The
of Psalm. Course.
Yeah, please don't attack me.
Is that the Psalm about everything's cancelled? Is that that one?
That's the one just after that.
Just one after. Fair enough.
Yeah, it's next to it.
Yeah, fair enough. Bless you, Di. Wish you well. Cheers.
Bless you, Paul.
That was Di Woolridge. Head to his website, Google him, buy his books, seek him out. Thank you for listening. Stay subscribed for more chats like this. Coming up, we've got DJ David Hamilton, writer and environmental champion Ruth Valerio, of whom we spoke. And hey, maybe you could be a guest as well. If you think you would be good for a chat like this, drop me a line, paul@paulcarenza.com. And do check out my other podcast, The British Broadcasting Century, chronicling a century of British broadcasting. And also find my lockdown Facebook live show. It's carry on every Monday at 7:30 p.m. on my Facebook page. Although if you're listening beyond summer 2021, then, well, who knows what we're doing then. But for now, that's what that is. Find me elsewhere on social media. Thank you for being here and catching up. Until next time, stay well, stay funky, stay in, staycation, steak. Oh, steak.